Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastama vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Yananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 3 Functions of the Chit and Achit Shaktis, page 107. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. There are innumerable living entities, one dependent on the other in the relationship of the controlled and the controller. But without the medium of perception, no one can know or understand who is the controlled and who is the controller. For example, the sun controls the power of our vision. We can see the sun because the sun has its body, and the sunlight is useful only because we have eyes. Without our having eyes, the sunlight is useless, and without sunlight, the eyes are useless. Thus they are interdependent, and none of them is independent. Therefore, the natural question arises concerning who made them interdependent. The one who has made such a relationship of interdependence must be ultimately completely independent. Because if you're the one that's creating the different items and they're independent on each other, then they must be independent to be able to do that. Right? As stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate source of all interdependent objectives is the complete independent subject. This ultimate source of all interdependence is the Supreme Truth or Paramatma, the Supersoul, who is not dependent on anything else. He is Svashrayashraya. He is only dependent on himself, and thus he is the supreme shelter of everything. Narada speaks to Chitraketu. So this is a very important principle, because it establishes the personal aspect. See, is that, let's say we have omniscience. Right? Means knowing everything. Right? So we'll take it the omniscient is that aspect of Brahman, how it's pervading everything and all that. But that's what we'll generally think of because of our logic. We're going to look at it that way. But the point is, where does this knowledge come from that they are all pervading in knowledge? Right? That knowledge has to be coming from the Lord. So if the Lord is the source of all knowledge, it's because he's the source of all knowledge. That's what makes him omniscient. Does that make sense? Because we're taking it, we have to take the senses and figure out everything. So he's the one that's the biggest and gone everywhere. No, he's the source of that knowledge. Because otherwise, where does that knowledge come from? Does that make sense? So he himself, just on his own, he's omniscient. Because he is the source of knowledge. He knows everything. And then it just happens to be the impersonal aspect of that is the omniscient point, you know, of the pervasion of that knowledge. Does this make sense? Right? So same way, omnipotency, right, means all potency, means they have to be coming from him. He's the source of the potencies. Therefore, he's omnipotent. Not that, okay, there's so many there, because we're taking it from our perspective of looking. But the point is no, he's the source of all these. Is it omnipotent, omnipresent? And what's the last? There's one more, no?
Omniscient.
Omniscient? We just did that. Omniscient? Oh, omnipresent, yes. So that means he is existence. Existence comes from him. He is existence. Then everything being an energy of his, it exists because it's part of him. Right? So that's why you see all the different things, they're existing in him. Now you can say, but things are always changing and all that, but they're changing within the context of the nature of that potency. That potency can have that particular variety, and that potency can always have that variety. It doesn't matter which one is manifesting. Right? So in that way, everything you see is eternal. Right? But because we identify with the external form, you know, which will come up in the next point, that we therefore are thinking that because it's changing, therefore everything's changing. It means our experience is changing. But the point is us being able to experience, and that which is experienced, or the material energy, those are eternal. Does that make sense? So the main point we see that is always being brought back in these ones here is that Bhagavan is the source of Brahman and Paramatma, of all the energies, right? So they're non-different from him, but at the same time, due to uniqueness, there's a difference. You make a difference for rasa. Because otherwise, for himself, he's just everything's him. But when you distinguish, then there's interaction. Okay. Anucheda 18. The body, life air, senses, internal senses, gross elements, and sense objects do not know themselves or other things or the jiva. Right? Because all these things, they're all dead matter. So they can't know themselves. They can't know, like the wall can't know itself. Right? It can't know anything else. The jiva knows all these items and the gunas which cause them. So the jiva can understand everything that's going on in the whatever they can perceive, and the gunas that are causing that perception. He does not really know this omniscient Lord. I worship the Lord with infinite qualities. I worship that Lord with infinite qualities. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.25. So the living entity, the material energy doesn't know anything. The jiva can know the material energy, but only partially knows the Supreme Lord. Because he's the omnipotent, that he's unlimited. So we can't know unlimited with our limited space. We can experience, but we can't know. Does that make sense? We can experience that sense of unlimited or eternity or ananda. But we can't grasp the whole thing because it's unlimited.
Can we say that scientists or people in general, they consider if you can experience means you know?
Yes, I mean, and that's how you know, is by experience. Mm-hmm. That's why it's said, I say, it's amusing that they make it that they're being objective. But the point is if they're experiencing it, that's subjective. You know, and then there's certain things. Let's say they find in their doing, you know, especially the one that's most amusing is the archaeology. Okay? Now let us say that they find something that doesn't fit into their concept. They actually can't see it. You know, it means it's there, but it doesn't mean anything to them. In other words, it's not subjective at all. So they'll disregard it. And those things that they know and it matches their theory, then because of that subjectivity, they'll say this is fact. So the modern academy is 101% based on subjectivity. But to make themselves sound intelligent, they'll say, oh, we're being objective. And the common person, because they're not necessarily just using their intelligence, they're using the, you know, just the emotions. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's like saying that, So that's the difficulty, is that then with, and the common person doesn't catch it, and they themselves don't even catch it. Because if you bring this up, the academic themselves will be quite, no, like that, what do you mean? If you don't speak exactly what is being, accepted within the academy in that area, no one will pay attention to you. You won't get your degree if you don't exactly follow what you're told by the chair, by your mentor. So where is this objectivity? Everything is totally subjective. In fact, the people today, you know, that are still, you know, the younger ones in the same field, they're waiting for the old guys to die so they can now present their theories. Because they can't present them as long as they're alive. You know, it's like you know, this post-postmodern, you know, this is, we brought this up. Because you have modern, then you have postmodern. It's post-post. They'd like to give it a new name, but they can't. Because the guys in the chairs, they're all modern. You know, and they'll accept postmodern and post-postmodern because they're modern. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that the illusion that's there, they can't know the Lord, so they actually can't see things in the proper perspective. But they can, like it says here, the body, the life, air, senses, internal senses, gross elements, sense objects. The jiva can know all these, and the gunas. You can point out what gunas do what, and you can see that. You can see how that works. But the Supreme Lord, that's then where it's going to be a problem. Because then we're as energy, we can perceive energy and everything like that. But the Supreme Lord, who's the source of energy, that's something different. That's it. The body, prana, senses, antakarna, manava, elements, bhuta, and tanmatras, do not know their own sarups, nor the objects of their action, anyam, or the devatas, param, superior to these organs and their objects. The jiva, puman, knows everything, himself, other things like the senses, and the devatas of the organs from which arise the body, prana, senses, etc. And as well he knows sattva and other gunas, which are the basis of the body and senses. The jiva knows all these. I worship that Lord with unlimited shaktis, knower of unlimited things, all the body and jivas, whom the jiva does not know. So this thing, even though the jiva can know all these, and that way that's the superior. Was it here we were having the discussion on why the jiva would be superior? Oh, you were saying. So this is why. Does that make sense? Because he can know all these sense objects, but they can't know him. They don't know themselves. That's the superiority, because it's a matter of the consciousness. It's not a matter of volume. Does that make sense? See, is that we have to remember is that this position that volume becomes so important in measuring things. That's something that was introduced by the Ionians, right? It's relativity. That this is relative to that. And everything is relative. But to make that as the most important means I'm only making what I can see with the senses as the most important. Right? So it's not about what is higher principles, what's the supreme, what's the absolute, what are higher metaphysical principles, you know, what is, you know how you say the ancient laws, all these kind of things. That doesn't matter when you're using a relativity. Relativity, that just means that what I am seeing and what you're seeing, and if it matches, then hey, this is truth. If what I'm seeing and what you're seeing doesn't match, then what I say is truth, and what you say we have to work on. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So the introduction of this, and now you see is that becomes, you know, it's always been there in the background, but then you see with the prominence of the bourgeois coming up in the Age of Enlightenment, right? That's the thing. Is it drops down a few notches. And then now they call it Enlightenment. It sounds like a commercial. You know, it's like Exxon talking, having a six-page advertisement just showing plants and lush green and everything like that because they're supporting that. Even though, you know, 3 months before they had an oil spill that wiped out, you know, so many things, but they put this out because they're green and all that kind of jazz. I mean, if you look at it, you know, crude oil is organic. No? You know, so it is natural, it's organic. So they only deal in natural organic things. Right, yeah. So it's like that, is that the original thing you see before the Ionians was that you had basically the intellectuals, you had the Brahmins, and you had the Kshatriyas. So Brahmins, they had the knowledge, Kshatriyas had that same knowledge, and they managed it. And then the Vaishyas and Shudras, they did their thing, because they're the general populace, and so then they're educated by the Brahmins, and they're protected by the Kshatriyas. And that way they prosper. Right? But with the Ionians now, it's like whoever is there and thinking, and if you get enough people together saying whatever a truth is a truth, it becomes the truth by that law. So now we take it that it's numbers and volume that's important. Because you see in the Vaishyas and Shudras, it's all about numbers. Right? So the Vaishyas, it's how many numbers they have. And the Shudras, it's how many numbers are in our group. Right? Because for the Vaishyas, it's all right. It works for them because they make money off of the volume of Shudras. Right? Does that make sense? So then it becomes numbers become the measurement. Does that make sense? So this point of relativity is that but the point of the absolute disappears. It's not that relativity wasn't there before. It's just that it wasn't the Brahma thing. The absolute is the original. And then the relatives. In other words, the subject is the main thing. And the object, then that's the thing that people deal with. But it has to be in contact with the ultimate subject. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty, is then it comes up that we take it that it's by volume of the material nature that's what makes it superior. When it's not, it's by the consciousness, it's by the comparison to the absolute. So the absolute being, fully conscious of everything. The jiva being conscious, that puts them in that category, but minor. So they're less than the Lord, but material energy is unconscious. So that makes the jiva superior to the material energy. Right? It's not a matter of control, this and that. Right? Because for Brahmins, is control the main thing? Or is that for Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras? Does that make sense? It's knowledge. It's the understanding. It's the perception. That's what's important to the Brahmins. You know what I'm saying? So in the modern context, then it's always about numbers. If more people believe that, then it's said to be, Prabhupada mentions, a million people say a lie is truth, that then it'll be, in the modern context, it'll be stated, this is truth. But in the Vedic, it doesn't matter. The whole planet can say there's no God, but that doesn't make any difference. It's not about volume of people. It's about reality, the absolute. So you always have to see things in the context of the absolute truth. Because in the absolute truth, then there's the absolute knowledge, but there's also the point of what is the point of the expansion of the energies is rasa. And so with dead matter, there is no rasa. There's no rasa between itself. There's no rasa between the living entity and dead matter or the supreme and dead matter. Like Krishna doesn't deal with the dead matter directly. The jivas deal with it, but at the same time as they don't gain any satisfaction from it. And then you have the material nature itself. It just doesn't care. Its natural position is pradhan. Everything's homogenous there, and there's just nothing happening. Does that make sense? So you could say your pradhan is your origin of the concept of nothingness. Right? So does that make some sense? Does that work? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Polytheistic religions were more popular. And in middle time, when Kshatriyas and then Vaishyas came to the start of Peru, monotheistic system, Christianity and Islam became more popular.
Okay. But the question comes up is it, are they generating it? So then, why did Christianity become popular? Or let's say, why did Judaism start? It just one day happened and everyone goes, hey, the latest thing, did you hear, saw on Facebook the latest thing is Judaism. You know, hey, you know, you're going to get with it, or, you know, you're going to be one of those old-fashioned, you know, pagans.
Wasn't there always?
That's another question. We're not getting into that point. But I'm just saying, as far as the historical thing goes, was there a person or not? Okay. So then you say, as Christianity comes up, was there a person or not? Right? If the Islam comes up, was there a person or not? Right? So that's the whole point is that when there's people that are preaching, then these things come up. It has nothing to do with that. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Because you see is that when they're going into this, when you have the Vedic, the Hindu society, basically if they're following nicely the principles according to the Vedic, no matter what their consciousness is, they can all get along. Right? But as you introduce these others, these world religions, one world religion generally has a difficulty getting along with another world religion. Right? And then within themselves, they don't get along. You know, so it's, does that make sense? So it's just because it becomes, the focus becomes on the particular ritual, not on the Supreme Lord. Let me say, let's say you take any of these religious works. How much is focused on the nature of the Absolute, and how much is focused on the rituals, or the, you know, what is to be done by the people who are following that Absolute? Right? So very little knowledge on the Absolute. So because of the difference in the external form and lack of importance on the commonality, then they don't really get along. Right? But the monotheistic aspect is there, but at the same time, if you look very carefully, it is monotheistic, but that monotheistic ultimately ends in impersonalism. You know, so there's just one supreme. So we can see is it's not actually, it's there, but at the same time as it's not. Right? Because probably if you go into the you know, polytheists and all these, if you get into them, it'll also become impersonal. You know, they'll be starting from a lower level, but they'll... So yes, it is better, but that's because of preachers. Like that. People who have come and started that. Like that. So Bhavishapurana talks about them. They come, they do these things. And that's why it's introduced. So... Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. Material scientists can make an analytical study of the physical elements, the body, the senses, and the sense objects, and even the air that controls the vital force. But still they cannot understand that above all these is the real spirit soul. In other words, the living entity, because of his being a spirit soul, the living entity, because of his being a spirit soul, can understand all the material objects, or, when self-realized, he can understand the Paramatma, upon whom yogis meditate. Nevertheless, the living being, even if advanced, cannot understand the Supreme Being, the personality of Godhead, for he is Ananta, unlimited in all six opulences, right? So, does not really know the omniscient Lord, right? That's the point, is that Brahman aspect, generally you see is there, everybody has kind of a concept of that, or you can bring it up and it's cool. If nothing else, you can say, may the force be with you. And then they'll catch it. Right? But, and Paramatma, there is that kind of, some have that concept of that there's some kind of personalized supreme. But it's just a matter of still just controlling the unlimited energies. But this point of knowing the personality of Godhead, that they don't know. So only if Krishna reveals. It means the other, of course, Krishna's revealing, but that's to the mundane intelligence, Krishna will show the unlimitedness of the Lord and the eternality of the Lord and the unchanging nature of the Lord. That much with your mundane intelligence, if you apply your intelligence to meditate on the Supreme, then Krishna will reveal that much without devotion. But only with devotion can you actually know Bhagavan. And only when you know Bhagavan do you know Brahman and Paramatma. So, yeah. What doubt is there about this for one who chants the name of the unlimited Lord, who is the shelter of the greatest devotees, who has unlimited power, and who is called unlimited because he bestows his unlimited qualities to the devotee? Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.19. In the universe, there appears to be duality, difference from the Lord. In this world, the jiva sees objects. In the spiritual world, the paramatma, or the jiva, exists as everything by his surup shakti. There, the jiva cannot see objects by his material senses. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The jiva cannot see paramatma, whereas paramatma can see himself and everything else. Bitan taram are kena vijaniyat. By what senses can the knower be known? He is the paramatma, atma, of the jiva, asya. In his sarup exists all shaktis, yatra sarvam adbhut. He cannot be known by any other being. The meaning is this. In the world, the product of maya, there seems to be difference. Yatra hi dvaitam iva bhavati. Though it is non-different from the Lord, since its source, it is non-different from the Lord, since its source is the Lord. The world appears completely different with insentient contamination and temporary nature by the inconceivable shakti called maya. It appears to have an independent existence at all times. In that world, tat, the jiva, itara, sees objects, itaram, because of the suitability of the sense organs and the object perceived. In the spiritual world, yatra, the paramatma of the jiva, asya, like the sun in relation to its ray, exists as everything by his sarup shakti. He exists there eternally, not by having attained his shakti at some time. Yatra tvasya sarvam atmaiva bhut. That means Krishna doesn't attain his shakti. He's the source of shakti. Because if you attain the shakti, it means the shakti had to come from somewhere. So that's the point. He is the one from whom everything is coming. That's the point. And that's a person. Right? It's not an impersonal concept. The person is the source of everything. Right? Does that make sense? He exists there eternally, not by having attained his shakti at some time. In the spiritual world, tat, the jiva sees what objects come, by what senses, kena. He cannot see anything by any means. The rays cannot reveal the glorious world within the sun by their power. Right? The rays are outside, they're emanating from, they can't reveal the sun. Right? The sun reveals itself. And you can't see what's inside the sun by the sun rays. The rays cannot reveal the glorious world within the sun by their power. Light cannot burn fire. By what senses can one know Paramatma? The knower of everything, Vigyataram, who has powers within his sarup. No senses can know him. What, what was mentioned concerning Jnana Shakti applies to Kriya and Icha Shaktis as well. Daksha speaks to the Lord. Vriti. Having described the functions of the Bahiranga Shakti and Antaranga Shakti, next, the nature of their interaction with the Supreme Lord is discussed. First, in the next three Anuchedas, the nature of interaction of Bahiranga Shakti is described. Anucheda 19. Maya is described as being under the Lord's control. O Lord, O Supreme Power, you conquer the material gunas contained in the jiva's intelligence at all times by your surup shakti. You are time which agitates the gunas. You destroy ignorance in the subtle body. Please bring near you that person who has been thrown in the wheel in the wheel of 16 spokes by ignorance and is being squeezed like a piece of sugar cane. Supposed to be in the wheel, in the wheel? Or it's just that that got repeated?
I would say that just got repeated.
Okay, so it's not a wheel inside a wheel.
I think so.
Okay. It's being squeezed like a piece of sugar cane. So that says it has more meaning than we necessarily like to give to it. About chewing the chewed means the squeezed sugar cane, because we're the squeezed sugar cane. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.22. Swadhamna means by his chit potency. Kala is the stimulator of maya. You control the material gunas of the jiva, atma. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. The wheel of material miseries is also a creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is not under the control of the material energy. Rather, he is the controller of the material energy, whereas we, the living entities, are under its control. When we give up our constitutional position, Jivaras Rup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 20.108, the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates this material energy and her influence over the conditioned soul. That's another aspect. He creates the potency, that means that influence of the material energy. So it's not the material energy is superior to the jiva. It's Krishna's potency that makes it control the jiva. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Therefore, he is the supreme. Because otherwise, then you'd have to take it that the material energy is controlling, but how would it control independently without the Lord? So that means she's not independent. She's being controlled by him. So he's the controller of the jiva. So the jiva can be controlled either through the internal or the external, whether they keep this mood of I am the servant or not. They see themselves as a servant, then they are function under the control of the internal potency. If not, they function under the control of the external potency. Right? But in either case, it's the Lord who's controlling. Therefore, he is the supreme, and only he can deliver the conditioned soul from the onslaught of material nature. Because otherwise, the material nature was independent and was controlling the jiva, then the material nature could give independence to the jiva. Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite, Bhagavad Gita 7.14. The three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, influence the living entity, but not me. Manifesting within the minds of all beings, they induce the living entity to become attached to material bodies and to become bound up. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.12. Right? So the modes manifest within the mind of the living entity, and that's why they become bound. Right? That's why if you change the mentality, you see it in connection with Krishna. So you don't see it according to the modes. You see it according to its relation with Krishna. So you're not bound by the modes. Does that make sense? Means the external nature still mechanically functions by the influence of the modes. But that's just mechanics. But the living entity being bound is because of their identification with those modes. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
So if we want to see the progression, can we say that Daivi Maya, then Jiva Maya, then Guna Maya? Is that the sequence?
Well, Jiva Maya and Daivi Maya, I mean, I think one you can either say is that same, or Daivi Maya means the external energy. So that includes Jiva Maya and Guna Maya. Does that make sense? So Daivi Maya just means it's another name for Mahamaya. It's just showing that it's Daivi Maya because it's under Krishna's control. So she's still an energy of the Lord, controlled by the Lord. But so all you're bringing out is, we could say is, oh, but why Daivi Maya? Why, you know, then you're connecting it to the Lord. But that's the point, is everything's connected to the Lord. But that Maya is not, it's under the control of the Lord, but it's not and showing us the Lord. That's yoga maya. Yoga makes the connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So the yoga maya is superior to Daivi Maya. Right? You know, you're just showing that it's still Krishna's in control, like we see in Vyasadeva's realization, that you have that aspect of how the material nature is creating everything here, but Krishna's still in control. Like that. So that makes sure that's the daivya aspect. So the jiva maya and the guna maya, those are within. So guna maya is going to be what things are made up that he's illusioned by. So by the modes of nature, you know, then he's controlled. So that's the jiva maya. So, yeah. You know, at least you don't necessarily, you bring it out so you can see how it's mechanically working. But for the living entity, the two go together. They're not a separate thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Wasn't the Gita only Daivi Maya mentioned? There's no mention of Jiva Maya or Guna Maya.
No, but Prabhupada does mention the covering and throwing potencies.
Right.
Because that's the same thing. Like that. It's also, they have technical names. Mm-hmm. Like that. Yes. So, which one's which?
The throwing.
Okay. So the first one would be the jiva maya. So the. So that's same as jiva maya or the covering potency, and the other one is the. Prakshipatmika is the throwing. It's the guna maya. So they have all these different names. So all both of these together are known as Daivi Maya or Mahamaya, or the external energy, or the inferior energy. You know. So depending on which quality you're trying to bring out, then that's there. So the throwing and the covering, that's the Sanskrit for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the point is the covering means you're covering the jiva. That's why it's jiva maya. You're not covering the material energy. She's already who she is, yeah. And throwing means you're just being in different positions within the guna maya. Means you're in this, you know, you take birth here, take birth there, or, you know, you live under a rock, or you live in a house, or you live in a tree. You know, these are all the guna. So you're thrown to these different positions. Right, by the guna maya, that's, you know, what's around you. But that you identify with it and you see the non-difference and all that, that's the jiva maya. So you can see the two go together. Because the jiva maya is about identifying with the guna maya. But you can see that there's a difference there. Right? If you're in one guna maya, I mean one aspect of jiva maya, you've already accepted that position, right? And then by the transformation of that jiva maya, then you accept another position. And then once you accept it, you're thrown to there. You know, it's like for us to be in our position, it's already, we've been thrown to this position, right? Because, you know, if you start off as Brahma, this is a few steps down from Brahma, right? And as we see is then from here, you know, you have... How you say? What is it? What's that thing that you think? The world is your
oyster.
Yeah, world is your oyster. Or you mean, is it? You never heard that one?
Yeah, heard.
But it just means, you know, you have all this unlimited opportunity, right? It means you as a human being, you have 8,400,000 opportunities of what you can do with your life, right? So,
those opportunities, 8,400,000
species, are basically jiva maya. No, it means the positions are made out of particular combinations of the elements. So that's your guna maya. Because to be a demigod, that's the guna maya. You can be in that body. That you identify that you are a demigod, that's jiva maya. So that's the thing, is that you're in one particular body, the jiva maya covers you, that you think you're there, but because of how you act and all that, then you actually start manifesting the nature to fit into a different guna maya. And then once you're covered, that you identify nicely with that, then you're thrown to that position. Yes?
Somebody asks you, Prabhupada,
what is this strong potency? And Prabhupada said, that means somebody comes to Krishna consciousness, and then Maya starts to dictate to him, what are you doing here? Get out of here and go outside to endure. And then
he's thrown out. The thrown out Maya. Yes. Or the bloop Maya. Yep, we're good. The three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, influence the living entity, but not me. Manifesting in the minds of all beings, they induce the living entity to become attached to material bodies and to become bound up. Right? So they influence, but the devotee, when he's absorbed in Krishna, just as Krishna's not influenced, the devotee's not influenced. Right? Prahlad speaks to Nrisimha, Anucheta 20. By your glance, you carry out creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe by Maya, though it is not desired by you, but only by the jiva. Just as a piece of iron moves forward because of a magnet, Maya moves by the influence of the Lord. I offer respects to the Lord, the witness of the gunas and jivas, karmas. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.38. The commentary says, the Lord does not desire the creation for himself, ikshitu, but he desires it for the jivas. He does not desire it at all, since Prakriti is not suitable object for his glance, right? Because it won't reciprocate affection, material energy. Therefore, it's not something that is suitable for him, it's for rasa. But because the jiva wants to enjoy Krishna's energy separate from him, right? And the problem is all these energies are non-different from him and fully conscious of him. Then it won't work. So then the external energy becomes the proper energy for the living entity to try to enjoy separately. Therefore, by Krishna's desire, the creation happens. But it's for the jiva. And then by working with this, one, they're kept busy outside and not creating a disturbance in the spiritual world. But at the same time, it gives an opportunity for them to come back to the spiritual world because the external energy won't satisfy them, and at some point they're going to ask why. Right? So that's the important part. Because otherwise, as long as they're thinking, yes, I can take the energy and control and enjoy it, and everything will be nice, then that goes on. But as soon as they start understanding that this doesn't work, then you get the... Then that's when now you start to break the control of the external energy. Right? Because otherwise people don't ask why. Why do you... Means it's just like, if we ask why do you need money, it's kind of like, what? What are you talking about? Right? You know, I say, and I don't know if it's still a concurrent usage, but in American you say, duh. Yeah? Still works, okay.
Still works.
Just means that, like, that's stupid. That is obvious, of course. But they're not thinking. Why? So that's the whole thing. You just take it, you keep asking why, you'll get back to the Lord, because he's the original. Because why means there's a cause. Right? You have an effect, like money, so what's the cause of that? Right? You know, you want to maintain, you want to be happy, something like that, but what's there? What's the nature of the jiva? Why happiness? Right? Why would you want something that's outside of yourself? Right? So ultimately it has to come back to yourself. And so then it's going to be this aspect of the Lord. So he being the original cause of all causes, then all whys will go back to him. No? Yeah? Yes.
There was one devotee, he was giving talk in India, and somebody challenged him because he was going to this. Krishna is the cause of all causes. So somebody challenged him. So, but who is Krishna's father? And then the Lord said, Nanda Maharaj. He also has a father.
He was?
He also has a father. Right? Because Krishna is the cause of all causes, and you have father, you have your father, and he has his father, and then Krishna is the father of all. And then the challenge is, who is Krishna's father then? That means Krishna should have also called.
And then, how did it go?
Then he was pacified. The person who was asking the question,
he was quiet.
Pleased somehow.
He was somehow pleased. Okay. That's good. That's good. Yes.
When you say why, you mean was the reason or was the purpose?
Either.
I'm just asking because I'm thinking in Russian, and in Russian we have, you know, these two words. What's the reason and what's the purpose? And they say, like, we use different words.
Yeah.
Translated both.
Okay, so how would you practice a Tato Brahma Jigyasa? Which one would you use?
The reason.
Okay. So reason is your more point. The purpose you'll use it for the inductive. The reason, that'll be your deductive.
So reason means something that takes me back to the reason. I mean, the purpose is something that takes me back to the reason.
The purpose of something, let's say, here, you have this water pot. This purpose is to hold water. But why should it hold water? Because you can drink it and it'll quench thirst. So the need to quench thirst, therefore you have the pot that holds water. You understand? They go together because your purpose is then what can be generated. But the point is why do you want to generate that? So you can use both aspects because you're going to use the medium you're going to use for it, and you're going to use the thing itself. Because you're trying to, let's say you're trying to become happy, but you're going to use a medium for that. So the medium will have the purpose. See, the two go together. That's what we're meaning. Science means the application. If you can't apply. If you can't apply, then there's no meaning. Is that something? Sure? So that's means we have knowledge, but if you can't apply it, how do you get results? So the point of knowledge is to be able to get those results. So if you're not getting those results, that means then you don't actually know the science. Right? Does that make sense? Let's say we have two people. Okay? So one has studied, you know, he got this big fat book on car mechanics. And he can go through, he knows every name of every little thing and all the little things and what connects to what and everything like that. And he can go on for hours describing it. But he, you know, possibly has never even seen a car. You know, he's only seen in the book. Or even if you show him a car, he wouldn't be able to do any of that. But then you have the mechanic who could actually take the car apart down to the last bolt and put the whole thing back together. So, who actually knows the science? You know what I'm saying? Because the one is it's abstract. So when his theory is abstract, then that's the art, right? That's why in art, you know, the Maharaj is about being abstract. And everything. Yeah, it's one of their favorite words, right? And so concrete, that they don't want to use that word. But that's the science. So the person can actually apply it to what's there and directly get the experience. The other one, they're getting some kind of experience from discussing the abstract, but that's mental speculation. That's the taste of mental speculation. That's the taste of jnana. That's why we make a distinction between knowledge about Krishna and knowledge not about Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So technically speaking, only Krishna consciousness is science. Everything else is art. But within art, you can say some things are more about the facts and some are more about the feelings. Right? Just like, let's say, if you're playing music, there is the facts of what notes go with what and what techniques, how to get that particular note, you know, or that effect of that note by how you deal with the voice or the instrument that you're using. Right? So you can say that's the science, but it's not. That's simply the theory. So unless you can apply it, so then we'll call that. So then playing music is actually the science. That's why Prabhupada in the 64 Arts and Sciences calls them 64 Arts and Sciences. Because they're all within that concept of art. They're known as the 64 Arts, but you mention science because you're going to apply it. So the ultimate point is that real science is applying God consciousness. That's actual science. Everything else is art. So that means, like this kind of assembly we're discussing here, this is science. And other than this, all other educational institutions and this, it's all art. That's just the way it is, because it's simply a theoretical concept, a theoretical construct, based on what they have observed, when what they're observing is not actually the complete thing. If you take psychology, how much do they know of the mind? Can they say the mind accepts and rejects, that's all it does? Do they know that? Something so simple? Or the intelligence, all it does is tell what's the common thing and what's the difference? That's all it does. The ego just defines, I am this, or I am that. Something so simple, they can't explain that. I mean, really, they can't. And so then how are they going to actually understand the whole rest of what they're talking about? Does that make sense? And so they'll put together what they have observed. But then, you know, I mean, now they're not as absorbed in that, but still they have a foundation in it. The Freudian is that, you know, everything goes back to sex. You know, and everybody's crazy. So if you start that as a foundation, then you may not fully understand everything, because why then, if everybody's crazy, it's all about sex, then why doesn't everybody just focus on that everybody's crazy, so great? You know, and then sex, just everything would be driven towards that and it would be fine. But there's this idea that not being crazy and not being absorbed in sex is a higher position. Why? Because there is an original position of the soul. Right? A detachment from the senses. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. And that's a reflection of the original, that you have a relationship with the Lord, an engagement of the senses and absorption and like this. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Can you say that Krishna consciousness is the only subject, you know, wherein we, like on day one, we begin with the concrete aspect of it. Whereas in terms of other knowledge, we need to begin from abstract and then go to concrete. That's the method.
And everything else, do you go from abstract to concrete? It means whether you want to apply the formula in that way. You know what I'm saying? The point is that just like, let's say, 2 plus 2 is 4, right? Okay, so now we have two parents, mother and father, and two kids, a son and a daughter. So now do we apply the formula 2 plus 2 equals 4? So family means 4? Would that be the best application of that theory? No. So then, in this, you're simply going as that which you observe is abstract. That which you experience, that's concrete. Does that make sense? So the point is the actual concrete is in connection with Krishna. Because otherwise, if the concrete is in relation to the modes of nature, then what you're observing is not necessarily very solid. See, in other words, samanna abhideya and prayojana, that you can use on everything, everywhere, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. The various breakdowns of samanna abhideya and prayojana, then you apply them in specific specific instances. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know how things connect, but you don't necessarily try to use one in the other place. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like if you're, let's say we are frying something, deep frying something, right? So deep frying something, technically you're boiling it in oil. So could we refer to it as boiling? I'm going to boil the potatoes. Right? But it technically is just boiling. That's all. Yeah. So like that is, know that a particular area uses particular language to define it. That's why we have so many things. So we're talking about how we're illusioned or liberated. Then we'll say Mahamaya, Yogamaya. We're talking about how the energy is controlled by the Lord, you know, and it controls us. That's Daivi Maya. Does that make sense? So it just depends on what we want to bring out. Well, then we'll use a language like that, yeah. I offer respects to the Lord, who is the witness of the gunas and karmas of the jiva. The earth speaks to Varaha. Anucheda 21. If the Lord mixes with Maya, liberation would be impossible. If liberation could not be achieved, then bliss could not be achieved. Maya is described to show that the Lord does not mix with it at all. Right, so you're only bringing out the aspect of the relationship between the Lord and Maya to show he is not unaffected by Maya. Because otherwise, if he's affected by Maya, how would you get liberation? So if we were talking about Brahma Parinamavad, is that Brahman transforms into the jiva. So if Brahman's become jiva, how do you become liberated? Right? And if you say no, but the Brahman that didn't become transformed, that means then there's two kinds of Brahman? You know, so then again, they go back to dualists. You know. Okay. You are the original Lord, the controller beyond material energy. You are situated in your spiritual form, being one with your spiritual energy and separate from the material energy. Right? He's one spiritual energy, and the spiritual energy then has these three features of the jivas and the external energy. So he's one with the Sarup Shakti. And the Sarup Shakti has three features, right? So the jiva can therefore, under the protection of the Sarup Shakti, in this way interact with the Lord. So you can directly interact with the Lord, but your relationship is never direct. That should always be understood. We can have direct interaction, but never a direct relationship. Just like your grandfather, you can have direct interaction, but you don't have a direct relationship. You're always the child of your grandparent. Yes?
Who has a direct relationship with Krishna? Only
Radharani. Yes. She's the Sarup Shakti. Everybody else is expanding from her. Right? So even the Yoga Maya is expanding from her. Just like Krishna. Krishna, he is in control of the Icha Shakti. Right? For his desires and all that. So that means if you're going to have an experience, that experience means you can have that impersonal experience of just sitting there and going om and, you know, merging with the oneness and all that. But as Atmarama, that's Krishna's inherent nature. Right? He and everything is one. But at the same time, to taste increase that happiness by tasting the variety that's there in the interactions, rather than just the experience of the existence, then that means you have to have the existences there, then you have activity. Right? The individuality and the activity that is there. And from that, that generates the results. Those then can be shared. Right? So the individual, the activity and the results. That's why Lord Chaitanya is then tasting the love Radharani has for him, then the qualities that he has that then generates that, and then that taste of that love for Krishna. Right? So the sambandha abhideya prayojana. So that's there. So you, so that means you have to have a medium for that. Right? So that's the extension of the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis. So Radharani, then she just takes the position of the Hladini. She's the Sarup. She's all of it. But she takes the position of the Hladini, as if, as Krishna is all of it, but he just takes the position of the, of the how you say, the Vishai there in connection with Radharani and the devotees, based in bhakti. Right? And so then Radharani's expansion as Yogamaya, who's also Sarup Shakti, right? Because otherwise, how do you deal with everything? She makes all the arrangements of the medium that you're using to express the bhakti. Right? And then the experience of that, that's Radharani. Does that make sense? So that's why Rupa Goswami, we haven't come up to it yet, but Rupa Goswami makes the statement, Radharani is the only devotee. All others are her assistants. So, because she's the direct devotee. Then you have her direct expansions, you know, Mother Jashoda, Nanda Baba, and Sudam, Sridam, Subal, and Raktak, and, you know, all these main characters that are always there in the Leelas, that they're then expanding from her, her expansions, right? Because then you have the Samvit Sandini Hladini. So then the gopis will be expanding from her. Then from the Samvit, you'll get the parental friendship and servitorship rasas. And from the Sandini, you'll get the Shanta rasas. Right? So all the trees and cows and grass and everything like that will be coming from Sandini. Right? And all the servants, cowherd boys, and the, you know, and how you say, and the girls that are friends with Krishna because they have a conjugal relationship with Balaram or, you know, some other arrangement. So then they're then the friendship, so that's there, and then all the parental rasa, Nandan, Jashoda, Rohini, all the other senior gopis, they'll all be expanded from that samvit. Right? Then you have in the Hladini, that's where then the gopis, they're expanding. Does that make sense? So that's then how the rasa will work. So she expands, and then they expand, and then like this. So there's, it's not a direct thing, because if it's a direct thing, it's a little, it doesn't work out as nice. does that make sense?
So Nasi is also from Sandhya?
Yes. It's only Shanta is from Sandini. So in other words, Ladini produces conjugal, Sandini produces Shanta, and Samvit produces the other three. This is mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his one of the Dasmul Tattvar Dasmul Niryas. The one in which he gives like these big translations, it's mentioned there. Yes.
So on one hand, we have Brahma.
But which hand?
I guess there's a little.
Well, you said on one hand.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
He's a magician. He's using sleight of hand.
Yes. So on one sleight of hand.
On one hand, we have Brahma with Brahma Samhita offering prayers to Govinda.
Yes.
And on the other hand, we have Raghunath Das Goswami Vilap Kusumanjali. So, and obviously his object of worship is Radhika.
So is?
Radhika. He's,
okay.
He's worshipping Radhika in that prayer. So, whom do we follow?
But why is there a difference?
Because one worships Govinda, one worships Radharani.
But in that, in Brahma, then... Does it not mention in the Brahma Samhita there how Brahma realized his position as a maidservant of Krishna, but he didn't understand all the details?
Yes, it is mentioned.
So then what's the difference between the two? Just one's a more advanced understanding. Mm-hmm.
So it's following the same line.
It's the same line. Hence, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Yeah, it's the same line. Does that make sense? Because there is that the point is that for us, if we're studying Brahma Samhita, right, then, and why are we studying? Because it's recommended. And why is it recommended? Because we're conditioned. So we can understand our position as servant of Krishna, but we may not understand the detail. Right? And Raghunath Das is then revealing more detail. But we see in here the main point, as you mentioned, is we're still servant of the internal potency. And Prabhupada makes that very clear. That's our position. We're all servants of Radharani. And she's serving Krishna. Because otherwise we can't directly serve Krishna. Right? So even those who, they won't put so much focus on that, they'll see themselves as servants of Lakshmi. Lakshmi is serving. And they're all assisting. So everybody in the spiritual world will see like that. Does that make sense? It'll all see like that. It's just to that degree of intimacy. So Brahma Samhita doesn't reveal up to that point because that's not the realization that's there. There's 100 chapters, who knows what, and this is which chapter?
Fifth.
So there's another 95 after this. So where it goes, it's not revealed. The ants ate it. You know, so Lord Chaitanya just brought this one chapter. That this one chapter would be you know, very useful for our development in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then we'll tend to, you know, it's more obvious because it's all about Krishna. But the point is, as you see in there, is that then in that first verse, it's about him and his relationship with the devotees in Vrindavan. So that's the opening of it. Right? Before that, you're just describing the cosmos, you know, and then bringing it down to the spiritual world, down to Goloka, down like this. You know, the relationships, how things work, how Shiva and Parvati created all the, you know, the living entities, and they're all male and female because they're male and female, and like this, and bring it all back to, and but then he's bringing it all back to Krishna. Which is true. When you're dealing with tattva, it's going to work that way. But the point is then when you apply that, then you're going to have rasa. That's why this is a complete science. Because in nectar devotion, then you have the whole science of how you connect everything to Krishna and that service to Krishna. Does that make sense? And then in that, then you can taste rasa. So that's why there's, you know, we'll make it because here you have karma and jnana kind of opposed to each other. But on the transcendental platform, they're not. It's just that they have their place. I mean, karma means that he has a purpose. Jnani, he has a purpose. So karma, he has a particular medium for that purpose. Jnani has a particular medium for that purpose. But in the spiritual world, then the only purpose is to please the Lord. And then depending upon your nature and that, then you have certain aspects and certain things that you'll use in your service to the Lord. Does that make sense? And when the pastime comes up, everything has its position. You know what I'm saying? Like you're going to make something, and then you use this pot or this spoon or this cut knife or this grater or this peeler. And they all have their position in that whole pastime. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say if I'm doing something with tomatoes, I won't use the peeler. Right? But if I'm using potatoes, I'll use the peeler. But then there's also sometimes that I'm baking the potatoes whole. I don't use the peeler. You know? So it's just, you get all this variety of what you can do. So those details are coming up in this position. But if you don't understand that you're the servant of Krishna as a servant of Radharani, and that mood is that you're not in any competition with Radharani, you're just as an assistant too, then only Raghunath Das's prayers will have any meaning. But otherwise, if you in any way think that, you know, you're going to be doing these things in competition with, then one doesn't actually understand. So in other words, it's not a fight over, it's not a competition over sense gratification. That's here. There, it's just a matter of trying to please the Lord. And so then whatever is your position, however, you can help. That's why the principle of that humility is so important. Because if we think we're special, then it's kind of like Krishna's special. And therefore everything coming from him is special. But that's just the inherent nature of something. So if you're going to be proud of that, then you can't function in that specialness. Right? Because you have to be able to see the difference. Because if you think I'm special, Krishna's special, we're all one, then it's impersonal. So the point is you know, Krishna's special in his way, and we're special as part of Krishna, then we're that aspect of that specialness. So that part of that specialness of Krishna applies in a certain way. Does that make sense? Because you have to know the difference. It means it's all one, it's one body, but at the same time you do distinguish between the feet and the hands. Right? So that's the thing, is that you have to be able to distinguish and know what's there. That's why knowledge and rasa aren't a problem for the acharyas. For them, they're one thing. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so the one you're describing, the you could say the abstract, the other one you're describing the concrete. But even when you're describing the rasa itself, just describing that, you know, this is there, and then that, you know, how you say this emotion comes up from this udipan, and therefore it pushes on this particular, on the life airs which push on this particular element, and that creates this system, that's still abstract. Mm-hmm. It's when you apply that's when it's concrete.
So experience is concrete, actually.
Experience is concrete. All other things are abstract. That's why in education, unless it gets to the point of experience, it doesn't change the perspective. That's why, let's say, we're discussing, let's say, these philosophical points. And some of these we've been discussing for years and years and years. But then you see sometimes, like, especially in the, it means here a little bit, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll see is that questions come up that are very, very basic. Because they've been heard, they've been analyzed, but they haven't been experienced. And so they'll ask a question that is actually from much farther back in the study. Right? You know, we're talking about those who've been in the class, not the new people. They're always going to ask like that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that you can tell is that they've heard, and you could say understood, but they haven't realized. So realization, that's why it's higher, because it has the experience. And that's why now it's a value. Because as soon as you get to the realization, that changes how you see it. Does that make sense? So that makes it, that's the difference, is that hearing means you're learning about the abstract, and removing any doubts about the aspect, about the abstract. Then you're working with that abstract and applying it so you get an understanding. Right? So now you can say you're applying the science. But it's not just an understanding's not enough. You have to continue that process until there's realization. Because then with realization, that's when it becomes concrete. Now that it's concrete to you, now you can give that to others. So that's why the next natural stage after realization is teaching. Does that make sense? So whatever, that's why you can see is a new bhakta can, according to their realization as a new bhakta, teach someone else in that. And since they have no Krishna consciousness, then that drop that new bhakta has, and they have a realization in that, how important it is, that they can give to someone else. That's why they can't answer all questions or deal, or you might throw their faith off in another area. But where they do have that realization, that's why they're a devotee, they can give that to you. So that's the whole, that's the point of preaching and association. Is that good? Yeah. So we'll have to end.
But sometimes.
But?
Kintu? Can I ask a question?
It depends. If you're ready for a very quick answer.
Sometimes we're supposed to teach some things that we don't realize.
No, but if you have an understanding, then you can get them to the point of understanding. So in other words, you have understanding, so you can bring them to that point of understanding and practice. Right? If you just have clear doubts, you can do that. If you've just heard, you can only do that. So that's why the problem comes up is that point of, like we had in the Nectar Devotion, that, you know, you have to have memorized all these 33 Sanchari Bhavas. The point is you can have them memorized, but that still doesn't mean you have any real understanding of that, or let alone realization. So to put that emphasis on that, it just means it's nice, it's easy to use. But you can't say that that itself is the symptom of development. Does that make sense? So that's why memory is useful, as you can see before, as Prabhupada pointed out, is that the Shrutidars, they heard and they knew everything. So it is a very good thing. But to say that, take that as the symptom, that only means Shravana and that you have a good ability in Shravana. But it doesn't mean you've cleared any doubts. I can memorize all 33 Sanchari Bhavas and have a total doubt about any or all of them. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing. So it has to come to manana, which means you practice. So whichever level you're at, so much of the time you see is many of our academic courses that go on, they're only on the platform of Shravana. Someone's heard, and then they can get you to go through the same hearing process. But whether they apply it, you know, it's like the Bhakti Shastri, and who's leading the course is a bhaktin, because she went and got the degree. But that devotee in the temple who's busy preaching and doesn't have time to go to India because he's too busy. And the bhaktin who has all the time in the world, you know, she goes for the course. He doesn't. He can't teach the course. But she can. Even though he's been in the temple for the last 30 years. And probably that bhaktin has been made a devotee by that guy. He can't teach the course because it's only based on Shravana. And it's not even necessarily removing the doubt on Shravana. So it's not on manana. Manana is the actual application. So you get the manana, then only you can get realization. The other one, it's just purely academic. That's the weakness of using a modern academic theory as the basis of Krishna conscious education. Basically useless, but if people are so used to it, you can use it, but the problem is if you're not removing their false ego in connection with it, you haven't actually benefited them. Only when they change their identity, then it becomes useful. Right? Otherwise, why use the thing of qualities or values if all it's about is memorization and having heard? Why even mention it? You know, and the skill means what I've heard about skills, not using it. You know, unless playing basketball with water and a piece of paper is an important skill, then yeah, you can do that. You can call it that. Does that make sense? Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.